Have you ever heard of PFOX, parents and friends of ex-gays? But do ex-gays really exist?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Did you see any of the congressional hearings with Planned Parenthood yesterday? Did you see some of the testimony with Cecile Richards of Planned Parenthood? Whoa, talk about eye-opening. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I will be getting to that Planned Parenthood testimony a little later in the broadcast. Last night, after teaching my night class at Fire School of Ministry, our Jesus Revolution class, to our wonderful first-year class, I got home, finished an article that will appear tonight from Brooklyn Orthodox Jew to missionary in Nigeria. You'll enjoy that read. And then I wrote another article. I just felt led to do it. A couple of folks had asked me about it. Was I going to do it? And I thought I should. I wrote an open letter to Justin Bieber. And it's getting a lot of attention, being shared a lot. He's talked about wanting to live like Jesus. And this is basically an invitation to him as to what it really means to live like Jesus. So you can read that by going to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest articles. You'll see I just share the gospel without any personal jibes at him. I don't know him at all. In fact, I know he's very famous, mega famous. I can't imagine what it's like. He's, what, in his 20s now, but as a teenager, to become super famous, to have millions of followers and fans, as a young man, to have access to every worldly pleasure. I can't imagine that. I know very few people that could make it through something like that without getting corrupted or polluted. So I'm on his side to really see him know the Lord and walk with the Lord. But you can read that article, again, by going to askdrbrown.org. And, of course, I've got my critics that are going to attack me for anything I do. How dare I write to Justin Bieber? Look, he puts out an interview and he talks about wanting to live like Jesus, and Time Magazine's reporting it's this big news. It's a cultural issue. He's got tens of millions of followers. Some of them hopefully will read this. Maybe he'll even read it and be drawn to Jesus and will understand what it really means to follow him and the new life that we have in him. The wonderful, glorious, transforming new life we have in him, where the old comes to an end. It's not a matter of you add Jesus in for a little self-improvement. You add Jesus in for a happier life. It's a matter of the old you dies and a new you lives. And the new you is so different from the old that you can't imagine that you were ever that person. It's hard to even believe. By the way, I don't think I've ever heard a song of his or watched him perform. I'm sure he's incredibly talented. He was raised to know the Lord. I know folks, one in particular, a friend of mine some years ago, had some real quality time with him in the early days of his fame and really spoke the truth to him, and he seemed to really take it in. But again, who can imagine all the temptation, everything before him? Who can imagine it? So let's really pray. So many people follow him that as God gets hold of him, then he could impact many, many others. And again, what he's had to live with, all the privilege, all the temptation, all the access to the flesh, most of us could never dream of anything like that. So let's pray that God will do something radical. Read the letter, circulate it to others. When we come back, I'm going to speak with Regina Griggs. She is the executive director of Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays. You're going to find this very eye-opening as we talk. Stay right here.
fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. I might take some calls while I'm speaking with Regina Griggs. She is the executive director for PFOX, which is Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays. I will be speaking at a summit that Regina and her team and some other organizations are putting together, the Safe Exit Summit. If you want more information, it's this weekend. It's going to be a great, great program Friday and Saturday. There'll be folks there. You say, ex-gays, what are those? People who once practiced homosexuality, people who were involved in homosexual relationships who no longer are, who have been transformed by the gospel, who have been greatly helped by counseling, and who are living new, productive lives. It's going to be a powerful time altogether. So to find out more about the program, the schedule, go to safeexitsummit.org. Without further ado, Regina, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, welcome. Long time that we've not had a chance to visit. This is so exciting for me, Dr. Brown.
Yeah, I remember. I think the last time we talked was when you were in North Carolina. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was on the Love One Out Council for Focus on the Family.
Got it. All right, Regina, tell us about yourself and how in the world you came to found PFOX.
Well, that's a very sad story, but you know, God has given me the strength that I need to expand this ministry into a nationwide support for families and friends. During our son's college years, he came to us one evening, had joined a GSA at his university, and announced that he thought he was gay.
So GSA, for our listeners, that's a gay, straight.
Yeah,
that's no, that's fine. I use those terms as well, but... Not everyone knows it. So he's in college, he joins a gay-straight alliance, and he tells you that he's gay. Did you have any clue about this beforehand?
We had some of the places that these kids hang out, clubs, dance organizations, where they do allow minors, not necessarily have alcohol, but you know there are places that cater to teens and college kids. I suspected because of some of the information one would find out about these and their dances, and they had pictures on the internet, and some people were dancing with same-sex couples, others were not. But we found out that he had gone there with friends, and when we quite frankly questioned him about that, and were told, oh no, we just thought it would be great, so a bunch of us went down there to check it out. So of course that's what you'd want to hear, right? So you
of course
accept that.
Yep,
And then later we began to suspect, even though he's one of these very athletic types, you know, many people feel that you can see based on effeminate features, et cetera, and that is just not true. You know, this is an emotional issue that many men and women struggle with, and they don't wear a sign that says, hey, I'm gay. So he came to us one evening, and we questioned him. And he said, how could you think that? And I said, well, you're going here and there. You're not going to church with us anymore, et cetera. And he admitted that he had friends who were gay, that he had gotten involved in this club at school. And that was the beginning of our long journey into finding help and hope for our child. To this day, he is still out there in the homosexual world. We're a very, very close family. We love each other unconditionally. But, you know, when I was going through this, I think I read a book every 2 or 3 days. I mean, I'd take a 200- or 300-page novel and write it because I was convinced that someone that had written something about homosexuality, helping, healing, changing, that I was going to find the right book with the right verse of scripture or the right statement, and that would have a major impact. The problem is he never asked for any of this literature, and deep in my heart, I had to grow which is why I started this organization. I didn't want to be alone. My husband and I needed people to talk to. I was embarrassed to go to the church because the churches sort of keep this issue behind closed doors. So while our son was out there with friends, going to the clubs and having a great time in college, we were at home hiding and trying to figure out where we could find a way to get out and how we could bring him out. So I thought, you know, I'm not the only parent out here. Mm-hmm. So I got involved with Exodus at that point in time, and we started an organization called PFOX, decided it needed to go nationally, and so I specifically do the email connections, and I write the newsletter, and I do still read a lot of books, and mainly in hopes of continuing to understand the struggle that men and women with this issue go through, and parents. We have parents that are so excited that Dr. Brown is coming, and that Stephen Black, who's a minister and an ex-gay, who's on my board of directors, will be there, and Denise Schick, who will be dealing with the transgender issue. I have parents coming whose kids are getting involved in that movement.
Yeah, and so, Denise Schick's dad shared his secret with his daughter when she was young, which was that he believed he was a woman. So obviously very traumatizing for the daughter to hear that and live with the pain of watching her dad's struggles and until he died. Regina, let me ask a couple of questions. First, why couldn't you simply affirm your son, hey, if he's gay, fine, he's gay. If that's what he feels and this is who he is, why couldn't you just do what the world tells you to do, which is be loving and affirm him as gay? Why wasn't that an option for you and your husband?
Well, one, I was raised in a church. I mean, our son had been through Christian school. Our oldest graduated from a Christian school. My daughter was in a Christian college. And while I may not be a strong student of biology, I didn't dissect things, so I didn't get the best grade one could get. It, you know, in studying that, I'm thinking, wait a minute. Now, Scripture tells you, and we read our marriage vow, and they talk about God created them male and female for that reason. We leave our families. We become united as one. You know, he didn't, and it just didn't add up. I'm looking at biblical questions that I had, and I would go to Scriptures and read them, and I thought, well, this doesn't agree with anything that society is saying. Then I began to read books about coming out of homosexuality written by Dr. Nicolosi, or written, and I've met people like David Pickup, who was, you know, an ex-gay who's out of a lifestyle, who's a therapist. I started doing my own research. I actually admit that I called up the parents' organization that's run by, was being run at that time by two homosexual men who produced books, and I had them mail me some things. I you know, I'm trying to be a good parent and look at both sides of this issue and try to come to some kind of logical understanding. But then I started reading this little book that seems to have disappeared called Why Ask Why? And I thought, well, shouldn't all parents ask why when their children are struggling or there's an issue in their lives that you don't believe is healthy or biblical? So I started reading that, and you get these comments about, well, you know, most children knew they were different when they were five. They didn't like little girls and little boys. Well, I was somewhat of a tomboy, and I'm the oldest of three girls. You know what? I thought boys were yucky. I'd rather go ride my pony or do crazy things on my grandpa's farm. None of this meant anything to me. It was totally, you know, I just couldn't comprehend. Why would somebody want this? Then I realized they don't want this. And we're allowing our children to be taken over in the school. And in many cases, you know, the government is backing the fact that one has the right to be gay, but one does not have the right to seek help not to be gay. And
right.
I started realizing this is agenda-driven, and this is not healthy physically, spiritually. All children should have the right to be happy and healthy. I agree. I just don't know any homosexual activists or, quote, gay Christians that aren't anti-ex-gay and that are not trying to rewrite Scripture. So I decided it's time we deal with the fact we love each other unconditionally. I mean, I have a new Mac. My son moved my stuff off my old computer. It's not like he doesn't know who his mother is. I'm not allowed on his Facebook. But anyway.
Yeah, I understand in the midst of unconditional love, everyone has their boundaries. But listen, I've got a bunch more questions for you, Regina. I know that there are parents and others listening who are eager to hear what you have to say. Friends, there's still time to register and get in. Go to safeexitsummit.org. All one word, safeexitsummit.org. Coming up this weekend, it's October 2nd and 3rd.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Regina Griggs, Executive Director of Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays. That's PFOX. To find out about the organization, go to pfox.org. So P-F-O-X, pfox.org. And the Safe Exit Summit, where I'll be speaking, God willing, this weekend in the D.C. area. Go to safeexitsummit.org to find out more. Regina, when your son came out to you and your husband as a college student, what emotions did you experience? And did you somehow blame yourselves or wonder, did you do something wrong that caused him to be gay?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I was devastated, crying, upset. We were saying, you know, that's, you're not really gay. You know, you've been influenced. I mean, it was not a heated, but a very painful discussion. And of course, we, you know, we blamed ourselves. I thought, well, my husband, military, and he rides submarine. You don't have the best communication with your kids or your spouse. Riding submarines for 20 years. And so that, you know, I'm looking for excuses. And I thought, okay, you know, I work part of the time, but I'm home and I cook all the meals, do all these things. I try to be, you know, super mom and absolutely had no idea. I mean, we were very, very close with our kids. And I think that's the hardest part is that we parents many times don't know. And we wonder, what did we do wrong that our child was struggling, may have been experienced abuse, that they did not feel they could come to us and say, I have this problem, I was touched inappropriately. I mean, the things that go through one's mind, because it doesn't add up. But, you know, it is an arrested development. These kids stop growing. Something has happened in their youth that they have buried, that they have not shared, and we somehow keep looking for the logic in why we haven't had this discussion. Well, it's not logical. It's about pain. It's about emotional issues. So how can we be logical? We can't.
Right.
We have to just pray through this and remember to love our children. I mean, something has happened that has separated them from you and the Lord. It's just that simple.
All right. Now, Regina, your son's story is his story, and you can talk about him coming out and then your response. So I'll ask questions about your response and what went on in you. But his story is his private story. So I'm not asking this about him. I'm asking this about others. As you have dealt with many, many, many parents, and you've read many books, and you've read books that say you're born this way, you've read books that say, no, it's something in the upbringing, or it's an abuse issue, or a disconnect with parents, or whatever. Having read all this, having listened to many stories of the people themselves, of parents and families and friends, do you believe that anyone is born gay?
Absolutely not. I've read the twin studies. I have read and been to conferences and listened to people like Dr. Paul McHugh discuss gender identity. I've been to numerous conferences. I sat on the board of an ex-gay ministry for years. I know the facts. I know the truth. Even both APAs and Psychiatric and Psychological Association admit they have found no verifiable proof that one is born homosexual. So we have to deal with the facts that this is an emotional disorder. Many people don't like that term, but that's really and truly what it is, because you're working with someone who has seriously been injured in some respect, who's not sharing with you or able to work through those issues.
All right. Now, of course, I agree with you in terms of no one being born homosexual and no reputable scientific evidence that supports that. And like you, I've read what I could, tried to understand all sides of the issue, tried to be as sympathetic and understanding as I can be, having never struggled with these things in my own life. But obviously, your initial reaction was one thing towards your son. At what point were you able to say to him, no matter who you are, no matter how you identify, you're our son, we love you, and we're here for you? How long did that take, and how did you get to that point?
Oh, well, we struggled because many people advised us not to allow his friends into our home or to bring them in, because that was a form of affirmation, biblically incorrect. And then we brought in to the ex-gay ministry that I was on the board a woman, a Marjorie Hopper, who to this day I am grateful to, who had lived in the life for 32 years and stayed at our home for months while trying to find a place to live in Washington, D.C. And she said to me one day, you know, you have to get to know this other young man and know his friends. They have the same injury. They have parents that love them and are concerned. You have no idea whether their parents are affirming or not affirming. So why are you judging others? Well, I was on my way to a board meeting, and I was trying to digest what she said. And it was one of these hot, nasty days, and I'm driving my husband's car, and the air conditioning went out, and I was busily singing, I wish we all could be California girls, because I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I'm an L.A. boomer. And then the radio went off, and all of a sudden, Dr. Brown, this voice says to me, get over yourself. Your son's homosexuality is not a sin against you. It is a gift to your heart to help other parents to reach out. Quit blaming that other young man. Then all of a sudden, the radio's back on, the air conditioning's working, and I thought, you know, I've heard people say, oh, you know, God put this on my heart or spoke to me, and I'm thinking, oh, sure. And then it hit me. He did speak to me.
Yeah,
clearly, audibly, and I had to admit, Dr. Brown, I was being judgmental in my effort to try to help my child and wonder what issues came about. I'm looking for who to blame. Someone did this to my child. Someone did that to my child. My son would never do this. Somebody led him to this. You know, it was very difficult to accept the fact that he had made these decisions, right or wrong, and I was not being called to judge anyone. And the Lord had to let me know, because I spent a year having pity parties and looking for the person to blame. That is part of Christian.
Yeah, and let me just say this, Regina. Some people live not just a year like that, but decades like that. Friends, do you have someone in your family struggling with homosexuality or out and proud gay, and you need folks to talk to, interact with, you need support, you need encouragement? Go to pfox.org, and to find out about this weekend's Safe Exit Summit, go to safeexitsummit.org. I'm going to continue to talk to Regina Griggs on the other side of the break. You can keep listening by going to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And friends, while you're there, check out this week's special resource offer. We're getting a great response to it. My 5-volume series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus at a lower price than we have ever offered it in the history of the ministry. Take advantage of it. All 5 volumes coming your way. They're life-changing, eye-opening.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I'm speaking with Regina Griggs, Executive Director of Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays, PFOX, P-F-O-X, PFOX.org. Regina, what do you say to those, and they are many, who say there's no such thing as ex-gay? All you have is either a bisexual who's only acting on their heterosexual desires, or a homosexual who is suppressing their true self, just like a right-handed person trying to write with their left hand. What do you say to that?
And that is one that does come up. When you have people like that address you, what I can tell them, and I do tell them, is a change is possible. No one is born homosexual, and every individual, male and female, deserves the right to seek happiness and their right to self-determination. And it is not your place or mine to attempt to force change or to tell someone they must live in this lifestyle because you've made that decision. People deserve the right to seek help and deserve the right to seek happiness. And I am yet to find the people that ask those questions anything but anti-ex-gay. Many have not thought. Been through therapy, they've not been through Christian programs, and therefore they speak from lack of knowledge and fear. They fear the changes possible, and they do not want that message given out. They have now denying help for young people.
Yeah, which is remarkable. It's grotesque that there are states doing that, saying that if you struggle with unwanted same-sex attraction and you're 17 years old and your parents are standing with you, that it is illegal to get professional counseling to help get to the root of those unwanted attractions. Listen, we understand there are many things that are deep-seated in human beings. If you try to learn a foreign language and master the accent as an adult, it's a whole lot different than growing up in that country speaking it, and yet you weren't born to speak a particular language. It's just environment. These things can be very deep. We understand the struggles can be deep for some. We know that some have tried to change and not succeeded. But with every other thing in life, look, how many people do you know that are alcoholics that tried to quit drinking and fell back? How many people do you know that struggled with overeating and did well and then fell back? Do we discount the whole thing, or do we make it illegal to provide help? Why do you think there's such a militancy? I mean, Regina, you get maligned, you get attacked, you get in the crosshairs. I know what it's like standing on the moral social issues, but here you are trying to be a friend of gays and ex-gays and show them a better way. You get attacked. We've just got a minute before the break. Why so much hostility?
I really believe it's because they have not dealt with the underlying causes, and they cannot go back. For many, without support, can you relive the abuse? And most of the time, I mean, I'm not saying this in the case of abuse, but with parents' issues, peer pressure, it's a young person's perception. The things you perceive as a child and as a teen are entirely different than you and I perceive, because it's an emotional issue. They've made a decision that somebody doesn't like them. They looked at them the wrong way. They said the wrong thing. And they have made a decision based on what they perceived someone said or did. We have to go back and deal through the reality and walk through that with these people, because they're going to be angry until they come to grips with what happened in their past and work through it. It's the lack of working through the painful issues and things that we perceive perhaps to have been the case.
All right, Regina, I've got a couple more questions for you. To find out more, friends, go to pfox.org. This weekend's summit, safeexitsummit.org. So parents are listening. Their 15-year-old kids just said, "Mom, Dad, I'm gay." How do they respond? What's the right thing to do? What's the wrong thing to do?
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just saw this comment posted on YouTube to an interview I did with Dr. James White about my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? It's Carl. I'm ex-gay and Christian. I live for God, seeking holiness. This book is liberating and very valuable. Anyone wanting to be holy as a Christian needs to read this. Yes, there are plenty of ex-gays. The vast majority are not famous. The vast majority are not known for their testimony. They're folks in churches. They're folks living their lives. Some of them married now with families. And their goal is not to get their story out. Their goal is to live a productive life in the Lord. Speaking with Regina Griggs, Executive Director of Parents and Friends of Gays and of Ex-Gays and Gays, that is pfox.org. Regina, a couple more questions. I appreciate you staying on with us. So we hear this all the time. I talk to parents, I talk to grandparents, I talk to youth pastors, I talk to different people. They're coming to me with their questions. Almost always, if I talk about these issues, someone comes up to me afterwards, crying, they want to tell me their story. So you've got a Christian family, they've got their kid maybe in Christian school, and kid's 15 years old, it's a girl, and she sits down with her mom and dad, and she says, I want you to know I'm gay. Before we talk about their response, let's get into the head of that kid. Do you think this is an easy thing for her to do, to tell her parents how she feels?
No, I do not think it's easy. I think in many situations, through Gay Straight Alliances, through counselors in schools, which are gay-affirming, we see them being encouraged to tell your parents, unless, of course, you think that they will not allow you to go to college, they will not support your decision, they will force you to go through therapy, etc. So there are lots of pieces of information out there for these kids. And if they believe, and the young woman believes she is a strong, born lesbian, you know, it's time to be honest, and I want to be respectful and be honest with my parents. So they are encouraged under certain circumstances to go to the family. And is it easy? No, but there is so much more backing for the person who is believing that they may be born gay and that this is a life they want to pursue than there is for those who want help and do not want to pursue that lifestyle. So there's right. a very strong support network for homosexual children.
Right, so you've got, say, in their school, now even in middle schools, gay straight alliances where kids will be encouraged, especially if they're not even sure. No, this is who you really are. You know, embrace it, and they can come out to peers. They can come out to older kids. They can come out to a school counselor without their parents even being informed about it. So there is that support system, the encouragement of the media and all that. But it's important that parents understand this is probably a difficult thing for the child. And if the child seems defiant or anything like that, that could be their defense mechanism because they're expecting some negative responses. So let's say with all the wisdom you've accumulated, the accumulated wisdom, I mean, what you've learned, what you've experienced now over this time, you're doing this now all over. It's now not a college-age son. It's a 15-year-old daughter, and she sits down to tell you. And again, the language she knows is not to say I'm struggling with same-sex attraction. The language of the culture and what she knows is to say I'm gay. What do you say to her as her mother?
As a mother, I would ask, you know, why do you believe that you are homosexual? When did you start feeling these feelings? And was there a reason you couldn't talk to me before now? How can I help? You have to be able to get them to open up, because you don't know when they or how long they have felt this way. They have to be able to confide in you and know that you're not judging them, because if they believe that, then lines of communication will be closed. You won't know where those feelings came from, how long those feelings have been going on, and are you happy with that decision? Because you need to find out what is going on and when it started to begin to have any way to address this or work through this.
And then if the child seems resolute, look, this is how I am, or I believe God made me like this, or you're just going to have to accept me, and I know what you believe, but this is who I am. How do you then respond as a parent?
Well, at least in our case, we decided that to disagree. Now, I believe one way, you believe another. We love you, and to remain in an unconditional, loving relationship, we must respect one another and be open to hearing what one another has to say. We actually chose, and our child agreed to it, to go to a Christian counselor so that we're having someone who is not mediating, but someone who is independent that keeps the conversation flowing. For us, I felt that was necessary. I mean, I was dealing with someone older, but actually that did help because we worked on projects together. We did things to build this relationship that would allow you to communicate and allow the child to see you in a different place, not to see you as the judgmental parent, but to see you as the parent who loves and wants more for you as their child. Because remember, they've probably been set up to believe, one, you're going to be angry, two, you'll disown them, three, you don't support gay marriage, et cetera, et cetera. I want them to see that I love them unconditionally, that I want what's best in their life. And if that takes bringing in a minister, a counselor, a rabbi, to have a family discussion, then that's what one needs to do.
And if folks go to your website, pfox.org, what will they find there? How will they be helped?
Oh, I tell you, we have some wonderful stories of men and women who have come out of homosexuality. Melissa Ingram, who I have known before she met her husband, and she is a licensed psychologist. She deals with women's issues. She was a tough lesbian, who was an identical twin and the sister was not. So she knew that, you know, she was not born this way. What her differences were, she had to work out. But her testimony is wonderful. She is one of the speakers at our conference on women's issues. And Melissa is now happily married, has two children. Her son Gary is out of that lifestyle. They run a ministry and they're reaching out to churches to help those families and those who struggle with same-sex attraction. Then there are people like David Pickup, who is out of the lifestyle, who is a licensed therapist. And there are people like Dave Edwards, who tells a story about being born out of wedlock, the impact that had on him, and a stepfather that didn't like him. But he found his true father, and that was God.
Yeah.
And that brought him out. So there are just wonderful stories. And on our Safe Exit page, we actually have Q&A. You'll hear different people ask questions, and you will see, because it is a video, you will see and hear responses from these men and women who have walked out of that lifestyle and are now leading the life they thought was never possible. Their parents, their married, their grandparents, they are leading the dream that they had at some point in time and have now realized that.
You know, Regina, when I was doing a book signing in Tennessee this weekend, my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, I was sitting next to a friend, David Kyle Foster, who's produced a wonderful DVD, Such Were Some of You. And I answered some questions on that about theological and cultural issues. And this woman said to me, she's talking with a family member about homosexuality, and they say that anyone that ever changes, they go back, and no one ever really changes. I said, tell you what. Talk to the man sitting over there to my left, David. He's been out of the lifestyle for several decades, and on his video, he's got, what is it, a couple dozen people with dynamic and dramatic testimony. So there is hope, there is encouragement, there are resources. And again, just having other friends, family, folks you can go to for prayer, for support, for wisdom, it makes a massive difference. And the fact that you're doing this, leading an organization that is hated and maligned for bringing the hope that you do, and you still have a good relationship with your son, that says a lot. So, Regina, I'm really looking forward to the conference this weekend. Thanks for joining us on the air, and may God's blessings be on you and PFOX in the coming days.
And bless you for having us on. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to share our message.
It's absolutely a joy. Look forward to seeing you. All right, friends, again, pfox.org or Safe Exit Summit. If you're able to get there this weekend, it's going to be Friday and Saturday. I'm scheduled to speak Saturday morning. SafeExitSummit.org. We will be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I am totally changing subjects here. This is Michael Brown. You're listening to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Yes, the Vatican has now confirmed that the Pope had a private meeting with Kim Davis and her husband. And he told her to be strong. He encouraged her to be courageous. So from what we understand, while they were in D.C., I guess it's the Values Voter Summit, they were brought in with Matt Staver, her attorney from Liberty Counsel. And the Pope embraced her and encouraged her. They met apparently for 15 minutes. And it's quite interesting when our president has made clear that gay rights trump Christian rights and has trumpeted that out very strongly at a recent meeting this week, that the Pope privately met with her. The Vatican has confirmed that they met, and others had released the details already. Donald Trump met with a number of Christian leaders, and they prayed for him, prayed with him. This is a report from David Brody, CBN News chief political correspondent. GOP presidential frontrunner Donald Trump met and prayed with about 40 religious leaders and pastors in his Trump Tower office Monday afternoon. Among the attendees were televangelist Kenneth and Gloria Copeland, conservative evangelical Christian pastor David Jeremiah, TBN religious broadcaster Jan Crouch, Pastor Paula White, Jews for Jesus Rabbi Kurt Schneider, and Pastor Daryl Scott, I think the latter, working with Benny Hinn's ministry. Now, some of the names here you'll appreciate. Some of the names here you will have issues with, but this is just who he met with. The meeting lasted roughly 2.5 hours, according to David Brody, and ended with pastors gathering around Trump and laying their hands on him in prayer. Kenneth Copeland, Paula White, and Rabbi Schneider prayed during that time, asking the Lord to give the GOP presidential frontrunner wisdom, stability, and knowledge necessary to pursue this endeavor. They also prayed for America and for God's will to be done. During the meeting, he talked about his Christian faith. Now listen, my own perspective, my own perception, based on hearing the same words from him that you've heard and observing his life from a distance like you might have, just knowing very little about him, just the public things, mainly over the years, is that he genuinely believes he's a Christian, because he doesn't understand what it means to be a Christian. That would be my perspective. Growing up, I had friends that said they were Christian because they were raised in a Christian home, meaning their parents were Catholic, or their parents were Methodist, or their parents were Lutheran, or their parents were Russian Orthodox, or their parents were whatever they were. And maybe they were baptized, or they were christened, or they went through confirmation. They attended church sometimes on Sundays, or they went on Christmas or Easter, so therefore they were Christian. I was Jewish, right? Born in a Jewish home, you're Jewish. So the assumption was, you're born in a Christian home, you're a Christian. You go to church sometimes, you're Christian. The whole idea of being born from above, the whole idea of really knowing the Lord and Jesus being the center of your life, as opposed to what religious faith were you born into, those are two totally different concepts. I remember debating a rabbi friend many years ago. He actually invited me to his synagogue to debate him publicly about Jesus the Messiah. He's the rabbi who befriended me when I was a new believer. And at one point during one of the debates, he got up and said, one thing I've learned from Michael is that most people who say they're Christians are not, meaning that he realized that there was nominal Christianity and that you were not just born a Christian. You had to be born from above. Now, there are certain Christian traditions that differ with that. I understand that, but I'm giving my perspective and my understanding. So I don't think Donald Trump is secretly an atheist or secretly a Buddhist or secretly a Muslim and claims to be a Christian. No, he believes he's Christian, just like 75% of Americans claim to be Christian. And obviously, all you have to do is wake up in the morning and live for a minute in America, you know that 75% of the nation is not truly Christian, or that America wouldn't look the way it looks in many, many different ways. So I believe when he says he's Christian, he believes it. He says at one point he admitted that he may not have read the Bible as much as the pastors in the room. Hey, that's a step forward, right? As the conversation continued, a few of the ministers implored Trump to tone down some of his harsh rhetoric. Didn't he say on TV the other day he's been a little childish? So maybe he's thinking about some things having to do with demeanor. Obviously, Christianity is not changed from the outside in. It's changed from the inside out. But according to Pastor Scott, who was present in the meeting and is neutral in the presidential race, he said that Trump humbly received the message by nodding his head, listening attentively, and not being combative at all. According to Scott, he has a very high regard and a very deep respect for men and women of the cloth. As for additional subject matter, Trump told the religious leaders and pastors that he will be a strong supporter of Israel and that defeating ISIS would be a strong part of his agenda. Yeah, I believe he feels that way. He also discussed trade, balancing the budget, eliminating deficit and tax reform. As for faith issues, he talked about how religious liberty and Christianity is under attack in America, that there's a lot of religious intolerance for Christianity in today's society. The subject of race relations came up, and when Trump was told that there's not the best relationship with the black community, he cited polls to the contrary, but he agreed with the overall assessment, according to one of the pastors, said he tried to do a better job. And Scott believes the GOP presidential front runner made headway during the meeting. I think Donald Trump changed the opinions of the African-American pastors that were in the room. They saw a side of him outside the media depiction and that they would give strong consideration in regards to supporting his candidacy. Hey, listen, politicians are going to do this. Politicians or someone who wants to be elected, this is what they're going to do. He wants to be elected. He wants to be the president of the United States. So you meet with as many different groups as you can. Perfectly normal to do that. When you have the kind of power he has, you can gather in a lot of influential people at a certain time and have them all show up there. And I believe two things. I believe one, that he wants their backing. He knows he needs evangelical backing if he's going to get in. And two, that he's open to hear. I believe that. So you never know. You never know what God can use, because the great goal is for God to really get hold of him. And if he is going to be the Republican nominee or presidential candidate, then you want him to receive counsel from godly people as much as possible. That being said, I still expect Donald Trump to be Donald Trump, barring a radical new life change. But hey, let him open his heart, let him open his ears to Christian leaders. That's why I wrote an open letter to him with that same sentiment. All right, friends, when you open up the scriptures and you get Jewish insight into the scriptures, when you understand the background to theological concepts, when you see how the New Testament was written and the Jewish lens through which the authors of the New Testament saw things, it really is eye-opening and life-changing and perspective-altering. This week only, you can get my 5-volume series, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. We have cut the price to the lowest it's ever been. We have to get the books from the publisher and ship them to you. I really don't know how we're able to do this, but the discount is tremendous. So check it out. No hype, really. I don't hype things. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Take advantage of it this week. My bottom line today, if you have a kid struggling with any issue in his or her life, you be the one to be there for support. Well, Stephen Colbert and his late night show wanted to have some fun with wedding cakes, mocking the idea of the slippery slope. He actually proved our point.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to have a great broadcast today on The Line of Fire. A little later in the show, I'll be taking your calls if you want to weigh in, if you have a comment or question. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I am going to play some clips from Cecile Richards' testimony before Congress yesterday, Planned Parenthood, real eye-opening stuff. I'm going to play some clips for you a little later. And I'm going to interact with Stephen Colbert in the next segment. No, he's not going to be on the air with us, but he's everywhere in terms of his videos from Comedy Central and now from The Late Show, taking over for David Letterman. So we're going to have some fun. We're going to interact with him. And for those that may not know this, we are putting out normally a couple of new videos every single week. We have converted our radio studio into a video studio. To say we went from night to day would be an understatement. How would I explain it? We went from riding a bicycle with one wheel broken to flying in a jet. I don't mean the quality of the radio show. No, that by God's grace, we've done in the quality way for years. But I mean converting the studio, the adjoining office for my producer, all of the video equipment that's come in, everything. I mean, all of my books had to be moved out so that we could just get the proper screen around for backdrop. My desk had to be redesigned. It's from riding a bicycle with one wheel broken to flying a jet. It's that big a transformation. And we are now able to put out a couple of quality videos a week, which means some of them, something will come up on the radio, and I'll talk about it right there on the radio, and we'll shoot video, and we'll even have some video clips. If you're listening on the radio, you'll hear them as audio clips, but you'll actually get to see them as video clips on YouTube. And then sometimes by the time the show is over, we've got it up already. And then ones like today, we're going to even put some more graphics into it. So you're going to hear everything loud and clear over the radio. But when you get to see it later, if we're able to put in everything that we plan, it's going to be all the more vivid. So you're going to be blessed by this. Make sure if you don't subscribe to our YouTube channel, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Just go there and click on the YouTube icon to subscribe. Or if you're over at YouTube, just search for Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. One story I'm going to touch on now and come back to later in the broadcast. Raymond Ibrahim has written a very disturbing article. I spoke with a pastor in Tennessee who shared more with me about this. Obama throws Christian refugees to lions. There are Iraqi Christians who fled from ISIS, from the Islamic State. They fled. They made it to America. They have now been incarcerated in America. And the Obama administration has decided that they are to be sent back to Iraq. I'm not making this up. And this is not some bogus internet rumor. This is true. 15 of the 27 Iraqi Christians that have been held at a detention center in Otay Mesa, California, for approximately 6 months are set to be deported in the coming weeks. Some have already been deported, and others are being charged with immigration fraud. Is this mind-boggling or what? We will be right back.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. Stephen Colbert, very, very funny guy, well-known on Comedy Central for years now, has taken over late-night programming for David Letterman. And the other day, he took issue with the slippery slope argument. It's one that we've made many times, that once you redefine marriage, there really is a slippery slope. Once you redefine marriage, you render it meaningless. So he mocked that idea in his typical way. And he talked about Representative Pete King, who said, look, with the new redefinition of marriage by the Supreme Court, a man could marry his lawnmower. And, of course, got a big laugh out of that. And then made reference to Dr. Ben Carson, presidential candidate Ben Carson. Listen to what Stephen Colbert had to say about Dr. Carson's comments.
And Congressman King's not the only one who believes gay marriage has opened the matrimonial floodgates. So does former doctor and future former candidate Ben Carson, who recently warned that if same-sex couples are allowed to marry, then more groups will also want the right to marry. Yeah, not gay groups, some other groups. You know, the ones who turn up every year for that crazy other groups pride parade.
Exactly. They are part of the gay pride parade, the polyamorous, the one who talk about loving relationships with multiple partners and who according to Newsweek a few years ago, are at least 500,000 families in America. That's a lot of people. And they're saying, what about us? How come our relationships are not recognized? How come we can't get the benefits? And they're at the gay pride parades. And hang on, what about the polygamists? What about the cast of sister wives? These folks, reality, right? A guy with his multiple wives, they went to the state of Utah and appealed and took issue with some of the laws against polygamy. And one of the laws was already reversed. And no sooner had the Supreme Court made its ruling on June 26th than polygamists were going to the court saying, what about us? So those groups are hardly hidden, hardly unknown. They are out there. All right. Stephen Colbert continues.
Problem is, you got people who don't want to issue the marriage licenses or bake cakes for gay couples. So who's going to provide party planning for Steve King's nightmare marriage scenarios? I will. Because where some see a slippery slope to depravity, I see a slippery slope to some cash. That's why tonight I'm proud to introduce Stephen Colbert's all-inclusive wedding cake toppers.
Now, here's the funny thing about him. I haven't followed his career that carefully, but on Comedy Central, he played the fool. That's the way he put it now. He actually speaks of being a devout Catholic, but he played the fool. He was the news commentator that obviously in a funny way wasn't getting things, but his points were getting across very loudly and clearly. And yet the points that he's mocking with this whole slippery slope thing, I think I said Pete King, Steve King, the quotes that he's mocking, it's almost like he's now going out of his way to prove the very points he's mocking. So, again, he's very funny, but let's see where he goes with his cake toppers for wedding cakes.
Mm. Naturally, you've got the traditional topper. You got one man and one woman, okay. And then you got the non-traditional traditionals. You got two men, and you got two women, and you've got two women and one man.
Oh, okay, he's joking about this. But remember, one public opinion poll indicated that just in a few years, American acceptance of polygamy has gone from 7% to 14%. Tell me that's not part of the media influence, the same media that was celebrating Will and Grace. I mean, that's the old days, the same media that was celebrating Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. That's the old days. It's now celebrating Big Love and Sister Wives and My Five Wives. So he's joking about it, but these are real life issues. And we haven't even mentioned Islam and their desire for polygamy. So he goes on, and here's where it gets really interesting, because he's mocking stuff, but he's well enough informed. I'm wondering, he's mocking stuff, but he knows it actually exists. If he doesn't, we'll set the record straight. Let's see.
You got two men, one woman. You got an all-female thruple, okay? And you got the classic three women, two men, where one man is married to two of the women and the other man is married to the other woman, but his wife is also married to one of the other two wives. This fall on TLC.
Okay, time out. There is a lesbian thruple. I mean, this has happened more than once, presumably, but this was reported a lot. These three women I now pronounce you wife and wife and wife. How does that work? With three women in their white gowns. I think two of the dads walked them down the aisle. A thruple. And then I read about it. They were going to have a kid, obviously with some outside help, and they were going to homeschool their kid. And then three guys in Thailand. How's that work? I pronounce you husband, husband, and husband. Their pictures that were put out on social media just went viral. And three guys, a male thruple, a gay thruple, a lesbian thruple. And then he joked about this, what was it, two men, three women, whatever it was. It looks like a polyamorous relationship there. They're coming away on TLC. Actually, already on Showtime. Married and Dating, a reality TV show on polyamory. So he's joking about it. People are like, oh, yeah, right, that's going to happen. It has already happened. And my suspicion would be he knows full well all this has already happened, and he's even poking fun while mocking our side. He's poking fun at reality as well. Well, there's more to come.
But if Steve King and Ben Carson are right, then I have to be ready for any eventuality. Which is why tonight I'm also introducing Cake Toppers for a man and a ghost, a man and a box turtle.
All right, again, very funny. And the box turtle one, he knows full well there was a comment that someone had put in a senator's speech. He never made a congressional speech about a man could marry a box turtle, but that became a famous quote. No, Riley, you could marry a box turtle, whatever. So the fact is, though, here, I've got it. Let's see. Woman marries a dog in India. Yeah, actually had a wedding ceremony. That's India. Woman marries a dog in England. Wedding ceremony. How about in India, a woman marries a snake? Yeah. And how about in Israel, a woman married a dolphin? I'm not making this up. He's joking about it. This is actually happening. There's still more. Let's go.
The Eiffel Tower and Dora the Explorer. Okay.
How about Erica Eiffel? You say, what in the world are you talking about? The woman who married the Eiffel Tower. There is even a documentary done about her. These people have a fetish towards objects. It's called an object fetish, something like that. She actually married the Eiffel Tower. Is that why he even asked that? Dora the Explorer and the Eiffel Tower. Erica Eiffel. Look it up. I kid you not. All right, a little bit more.
How can I not provide a topper for Steve King and his lawnmower?
All right, how about the man who wanted to marry his computer? This happened within the last year. A man wanted to marry his computer. He said he had a sexual relationship with his computer. All the porn was on his computer. He wanted to marry his computer. You say he's got problems. I agree he's got problems. But, hey, you talk about marrying a lawnmower? You talk about marrying a computer? Oh, but Stephen, you left one thing out. You forgot about it. It's happened, I know at least three cases now of a woman marrying herself. One woman said she'd be married by 40 and it didn't work out. She married herself. I mean, you get bridesmaids and the whole bit. There's another woman, she just had it with broken relationships, was divorced, and had it with broken relationships, didn't want to depend on someone else to take her out to dinner or someone else to get her a gift. She decided to marry herself. The only sane words spoken that day were her 11-year-old son's words, who said, "I love you, Mom, but you're embarrassing me." So, Stephen Colbert, thank you, sir, for proving our point. Once you redefine marriage, you render it meaningless. Boy, and I couldn't have done that without exquisite help of Stephen Colbert. So thank you, sir. And we'll do our best to get that out in video form. And when it's up, you can share it with folks. And I think it's going to be pretty vivid, because not only will you see his part, not only will you see what he's doing, you'll actually see the reality of each of these different relationships that I talked about on the radio. All right, we're out of time. 866-34-TRUTH, short break. I want to come back, take some phone calls, talk about the Planned Parenthood hearings, and talk about what is happening to persecuted Christians who have fled for refuge in America. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We're going to get into Planned Parenthood in a moment. I want to grab a call first. We go to Linda in Flower Mound, Texas. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I visit you sometimes on a Facebook page. I really enjoy reading your posts.
Well, thank you.
I have a question about Romans 13:1, where it says, "Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God." Now, maybe I'm misunderstanding that verse, and you could tell me if I am, but I would say that Hitler was not established by God.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of problems.
Yeah, for good reason. Those would be questionable. And as we read on, we see that therefore whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you'll receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. So the larger issue is that God has established authority. All authority comes from him, okay? And whether it's a parent, whether it's a policeman, whether it's a governor, whether it's a president, whether it's a king, God has established all those authorities. So God has established the authority of the leader of the German nation. He's mm-hmm. established the authority of the head of the home. He's established the authority of the teacher in the school. And the role of that authority is supposed to be to do good, to oppose evil, and to do good. So that's how he's describing them. He is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. So was a Roman emperor an established authority by God? Yes, in terms of the leader of the Roman Empire would have no authority if not for God establishing authority in the earth. And that's what Paul is saying. However, if the leader misuses that authority and you have to make a decision, for example, instead of using the sword to punish evil, what if they use the sword to punish good? So they're supposed to be punishing evildoers. Instead, they start to punish those who are doing good. They start to punish Christians. They start to punish those who are pursuing life. Then what you have to do then is bow down to the highest authority, which is God. So when the authorities use their power to do evil, we resist them in obedience to God. We recognize that authority comes from God. We recognize that there is no authority outside of him in that respect. And yet it would be just like a parent telling an 18-year-old child that's still living at home, you are not allowed to read the Bible or pray even in your room. And if you do, you'll be kicked out of the house. Well, they have authority. They do have the authority to kick me out of the house, but they do not have the authority to tell me that I can't read the Bible or pray. if I'm that 18-year-old kid. And therefore, I say, Mom, Dad, I love you, but I'm going to read the Bible. I'm going to pray. If you kick me out of the house, you kick me out of the house. I'd hate for that to happen. But if you do, I understand that. That's your choice. But I'm going to do what's right.
Right.
And that's how we deal with it.
Go ahead. The Ten Commandments do lay down that authority. God and then your parents and so on. I understand that. A lot of Christians use this verse to speak out against civil disobedience.
Yeah, and I understand it because, again, they could just read verse 1 without reading the rest of it. So,
yeah.
For example, there were madmen like Nero who were the rulers of the Roman Empire.
Right.
And Christians had to submit to their authority, meaning Nero had the power of life and death over them. However, they would not submit to his authority to do evil. So if Nero said, sacrifice to me, acknowledge me as God, if his people said, acknowledge Caesar as Lord, the Christians would say no. Now, they didn't have the power to pull him down. They didn't try to assassinate him. They were crucified. They were beheaded. They suffered terribly. But they would not obey man when man told them to disobey God. So very, very simple principle. When the authority tells you to disobey God, when the authority tells you you cannot obey God, then you say, I must obey God rather than man.
Right.
That's the principle. But again, the principle is because we are submitted to authority, I prefer speaking about biblical obedience rather than civil disobedience, although I'm fine with that term and I understand what it means.
Right.
But our understanding is that we are always obedient. We're never rebels. We never rebel. We never say to authority, who do you think you are, and mock them and just, some policeman is nasty to us. We say, you've got no business talking to me like that, buddy, and we just take off. No, we can report that person. We can protest things. They have certain authority. We can't fight that. However, if they misuse the authority, then because we're submitted, we say, I'm sorry, I must obey God rather than man. So if the general gave me an order that counteracts the order of the sergeant, I am being obedient when I tell the sergeant, sir, I have higher orders, I must obey.
Right.
So when the Sanhedrin, which was the appointed leadership of Israel, when the Sanhedrin told the apostles, don't preach Jesus anymore, they said, we have to obey God rather than man.
And we take our example from David, don't we?
Yeah, we take our example from quite a few, actually.
Yeah, David, who wouldn't even curse the king, even though the king was trying to kill him.
Right. He recognized, and God had promised him the throne, but he would not be the one to lay his hand on the king. So we take our example from Daniel and from his three colleagues who said no to the edict of the king, even though it potentially cost them their lives and God delivered them. Others aren't delivered. But we honor God. So again, the principle, we obey the highest authority. When the lower authority tells us to disobey the highest authority, we submit to the highest authority. Just like if a 12-year-old who's put in charge of telling the younger kids what to do, the 12-year-old tells the younger kids what to do, and then the mother calls and the mother says, no, you do what I told you to do, because she's wrong. You do what I told you to do. Then we are walking in obedience. Thank you for the call and for seeking clarification on that. And of course, there is a long and rich biblical history. 866-34-TRUTH, a biblical history of these very things. All right, friends, if you have any desire to win Jewish people to the Lord, if you want to find out a Jewish perspective on the Trinity, a Jewish perspective on blood atonement, a Jewish perspective on the New Testament, but through Messianic Jewish eyes, and understand about the traditions of Israel and where they contradict Scripture. My five-volume series, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. It's invaluable, and as one, a leader in the field, I can tell you there's nothing else like it. We've reduced the price dramatically. If you've been thinking of getting it, get them now. Go to AskDrBrown.org. There's a video that'll tell you more. Just this week, take advantage of it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
How do you think today went in terms of its consequences for Planned Parenthood? Republicans and anti-abortion groups, they thought today would be the day they finished off Planned Parenthood forever.
Well, I was really glad to the extent that there was an opportunity to get a word in edgewise or ever answer a question. I was really thrilled to be able to talk about the incredible work that Planned Parenthood does around the country and the health care we provide to 2.7 million people. And I do think that point got across. And obviously what this whole hearing being generous, calling it a hearing, I think the whole purpose of this hearing was to convince themselves that it was okay to deny women the ability to go to the healthcare provider of their choice, because 2.7 million women and men choose Planned Parenthood, and they were trying to say that they wanted to take that choice away from them.
I wonder if she actually believes that. That was Cecile Richards, head of Planned Parenthood, on Rachel Maddow show yesterday. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. Here is an excerpt from some of the testimony yesterday, as Cecile Richards is being asked some very direct questions, and her answers were unbelievably telling. Matt, play clip number 8.
My first question is, how many Planned Parenthood clinics have mammogram machines?
There aren't any Planned Parenthood clinics, I believe, to the best of my knowledge, not any have mammogram machines at their facility.
And how many Planned Parenthood clinics are there?
On any given day, between 650 and 700.
Okay, so none, to your knowledge, have a mammogram machine.
Right. We have different kinds of arrangements with, depending on the state, to refer women for mammograms.
That was Representative Cynthia Loomis, a Republican from Wyoming, asking Cecile Richards, okay, how many Planned Parenthood clinics are there on a given day between 650 and 700? I'm not sure why that number would fluctuate, but between 650 and 700, how many of them are mammograms? Because we provide health care services to 2.7 million women and men, she said, right? They go to Planned Parenthood, although maps will show you. We've put the graphic up on Facebook and Twitter. Maps will show you that you have a ton more clinics that are not Planned Parenthood in state after state after state. Every state of the union, from what I saw on these maps, has a ton more clinics where women can go for the same health care services other than Planned Parenthood. They have no mammograms. That's why when people call Planned Parenthood to say, you know, we'd like to schedule a mammogram, Planned Parenthood clinics would say, well, we don't have any. Oh, they have arrangements. Then who do they have arrangements with? Then somebody else. Then why is Planned Parenthood getting the money? Why, pray tell, is Planned Parenthood getting the money? I've got a little bit longer clip to play. I'll play it on the other side of the break. But one of the questions asked is, what surgical procedures do you perform? Well, surgical abortions. Yeah, we know that. We know that. And this is a nonprofit where Cecile Richards makes over $500,000 a year, and where taxpayer money, your money and mine, goes to fund Planned Parenthood, ostensibly for non-abortion procedures. But what else are they doing that requires $500 million of taxpayer money if it's not going for abortions? By the way, this has been widely reported. As Cecile Richards spoke before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, she claimed that the sting videos were, quote, deceptively edited and heavily doctored. Yet just minutes before the hearing started, as Fox News and others have reported, a forensic analysis said the videos, quote, are authentic and show no evidence of manipulation or editing. Isn't that something? Yeah. God have mercy on America if we continue to fund Planned Parenthood.
Fire we want, for fire we please. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. We are going to continue to talk about Planned Parenthood, their testimony, Cecile Richards testifying before congressional leaders, Capitol Hill, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Representative Jim Gordon, Republican from Ohio, called the scenes in the video, quote, barbaric and repulsive. A question looming over the hearing was whether any of the footage was in fact altered. As Fox News is reporting, Democrats repeatedly suggested that important passages were missing, but the Alliance Defending Freedom engaged cybersecurity and forensic analysis company Coalfire Systems to examine the 10 full footage videos put out by CMP. This is the Center for Medical Progress that released the sting videos. According to their review, the videos were not manipulated. The report said that any missing footage was of non-pertinent events like meals and bathroom breaks. According to ADF senior counsel Casey Maddox, the Coalfire forensic analysis removes any doubt that the full-length undercover videos released by Center for Medical Progress are authentic and have not been manipulated. Quote, analysts scrutinized every second of video recorded during the investigation and released by CMP to date and found only bathroom breaks and other non-pertinent footage had been removed. Planned Parenthood could no longer hide behind a smokescreen of false accusations and should now answer for what appear to be the very real crimes revealed by the CMP investigation. By the way, I get people posting regularly on our YouTube channel where we have some videos about this, or on Facebook, and they will be on Planned Parenthood sides and say, look, everyone knows these were doctored. These were just repeating a lie doesn't make it so. It's amazing what people will do rather than face the truth. Oh, yeah, it's just manipulated. Nancy Pelosi. Yeah, manipulated, doctored, whatever word she used. She hasn't even watched them. Are people afraid to watch them? People don't want to know what's on them? 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, let's listen to one more clip, clip number 9 from the dialogue.
I want to find out where you get your 3% figure that you cite for abortion procedures. That's your self-reported abortion statistic.
That's 3% of all the procedures we provide and all the services that we provide.
Okay, well, let's talk about Planned Parenthood revenue from abortions. If you look at the 2013 statistics that you report, abortions from revenue would have been over 86% of your non-government revenue. How do you explain this massive disparity between the amount of revenue you collect from abortion and the fact that you only report 3% of your services being abortion?
Well, I think there's two questions you've sort of mixed in there, so let me try to address both. One is, as we've already stated, federal money does not go for abortion, so the federal portion that we were discussing is reimbursement for preventive care services. I think the other, so that's why they're not, those numbers aren't connected.
Can you tell me how many of your affiliates receive the majority of their revenue from abortion?
I don't know that answer.
Could you get it for me?
I'll talk to my team.
Unbelievable. So, okay, if their budget is $1.3 billion, if 450 to 550 million comes from the government, and that does not go towards abortion, all right? So let's just make it 500 million. So what, that's about 40% of their budget comes from the federal government. 60% comes from the income that just comes through their doors, right? And 86% of their income, let's just say it's the other 800 million, 86% of that is from abortions. Then how is it that only 3% of the services they offer are abortions? That is completely ridiculous and self-evidently false. False, false, false. It'd be one thing if an abortion cost a dollar and then the other services that they provided cost $100,000. Then, you know, you could say, or turn it around the other way. One abortion cost $100,000 and the other services cost a dollar. So it's only 3% are abortions, but that's why it's most of the income. But of course, that's not the case. The idea that she thought the hearings went well, oh, isn't that positive that she got to share these things and didn't realize the utter, what's the right word to use? Did she make a fool of herself? It's much worse than that. It's exposing the bankruptcy, the moral, ethical bankruptcy of Planned Parenthood. So there is an article by Al Parada on the stream, so stream.org. 8 things we learned from Planned Parenthood's proud boss. We learned, one, that Richards is proud of Planned Parenthood's role in fetal tissue research. 2, Richards still claims the videos from the Center for Medical Progress were deceptively edited. 3, Cecile Richards earns $520,000 a year. 4, not a single Planned Parenthood clinic has a mammogram machine. 5, although Richards says abortions only count for 3% of Planned Parenthood's total activities, abortions count for 86% of Planned Parenthood's non-governmental revenue. 6, Democrats think that questioning a woman about the $500 million tax dollars her organization pockets is misogyny. 7, Cecile Richards doesn't use Planned Parenthood for her own health care. 8, in Cecile Richards' view, abortion is health care. Representative Black was so shocked by that bit of Orwellian wisdom, she had to tweet it out. This is Diane Black. Wow. Cecile Richards just told me in GOP oversight that abortion is health care. As a nurse, I will challenge that every time. Cecile Richards never has heard about a baby surviving an abortion. Was not aware of that. And Anika Smith tweeted out, Richards never heard of infants surviving abortion procedure. Was she paying attention to the other hearings where survivors testified? Wow. Yeah, and as Al Parada rightly says, one should expect a little more for $520,000 a year. Just extraordinary. At the start of Tuesday's hearing, committee chairman Chaffetz, if I mispronounce his name, my apologies, asked the $450 million question, does Planned Parenthood really need federal dollars? For that, CEO Cecile Richards had no suitable answer, no answer that could be heard over the voices in those videos and those urged to shout your abortion, no answer that could be heard over the awful silence of the exterminated children considered by Planned Parenthood as mere tissue and revenue. And put revenue, underscore that, underscore revenue big time. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Nick in Calgary, Alberta. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Great to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I have one little compliment and then a tactic, and then maybe if I have time, suggestion. My problem is that I listen by podcast, so I hear so many things come up throughout the week as I listen every day, but I'm always a day behind, and so I'm like, oh, I have so many things to say. I just wanted to compliment two books that I read recently. One was called Street God, by your recommendation. It's an amazing book, and every single person should read
that.
Every single Christian should read that. And I also read this other book about the gay revolution by some really smart guy. I can't remember his name, but he's pretty smart, and everybody should read that too.
All right, hopefully that's outlasting the gay revolution.
That's the one. Very good.
So glad that you got Demas's testimony, Street God. Yeah, amazing story. And glad outlasting the gay revolution blessed you as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. And in regards to what you're talking about, this is kind of related. Last week you played a clip from Joe Biden, and he was kind of offering what sometimes been called the modified pro-choice stance. And this is something that's talked about in a book called Tactics by Greg Kokel. You've had him on your show before, and that is one of the best apologetics resources out there. So basically, he says this is the tactic that politicians use, where they'll say, well, I'm personally against abortion, but I think that other people, you know, I'm not going to tell other people what they can do with their own bodies. And that's kind of what Joe Biden was saying, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and so one of the things that Greg talks about in his book Tactics is how to point this out to somebody by using questions as opposed to just, you know, calling them a murderer or getting really angry. Is you're right, you know, like, it's understandable, but, you know, you can start by asking them, well, why are you personally against abortion? And they're probably going to tell you something along the lines is, well, I believe that abortion takes an innocent life. Abortion is, you know, is the taking of an innocent life for whatever reason, because the Catholic Church says so or because whatever, but that's what I believe. So then you can ask them, so you, by your own words, say that abortion takes an innocent life, and you think people should have the right to do that? And just let it kind of hang there, because they realize very quickly that they are playing on this myth that people have bought, that there is such a thing as moral neutrality. There is no such thing.
I like that approach, Nick. I like it. It's a good thing to do. Draw the person out, let them answer the questions, give their reasons personally, and then say you don't believe that that should apply to others as well, that you have a responsibility. Thanks for the call and the kind words.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me go back to the phones. Dallas, Texas. Christian, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call.
You bet.
From the hearings that went on yesterday, she admitted that they do not have any mammogram machines in any of the facilities that, quote-unquote, she knows of.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she talks about how what they do is they refer, out these type of services. And their whole mantra has been all about being able to provide women's health care services. Well, abortion's not really health care. But what I would say if I was on Capitol Hill and I was interrogating Ms. Richards is I would say, so let me get this straight then. You need $550 million, taxpayers' money, so you can refer out patients for mammograms? So it really costs you $550 million to make referrals to other, clinics that have those machines? Really? And so I just wanted to state that. One other thing.
Yeah, the more that she would talk, the more questions it raises. And when they would always say, mammograms, it said, well, you don't have any. You can't do screening for breast cancer because you have no mammograms. So what in the world, what are you getting the money for? When she's asked specifically what surgical procedures do you carry out? Abortions, that's a surgical procedure. It's like, oh boy. And
yeah,
I guess the level of blindness, in her world that they're doing a good thing, it's shocking. It's mind-boggling. Okay, back to you.
And also, they had 333,000 women walk in their clinics last year. 327,000 of those 333,000 had abortions.
All right, so here's a question. She claimed that there were 2.7 million women and men, she said and men, whatever that played out, that used their facilities. And then we know they said there were 327,000 abortions. So that would be the question. Where did you get the 330,000 figure from? How does that compare to their 2.7 million figure?
That was actually from Planned Parenthood before they took it down.
Got it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I obviously am not on the inside knowing what every woman in America is doing. But, yeah, let's hear from a random 1,000 women who were at Planned Parenthood last 12 months. Why'd you go to Planned Parenthood? What'd you do? What was the procedure? Let's hear from them. They should be everywhere. There's 97% of the people have gone through those doors should be able to say, I went here for this healthcare, that. And then, of course, they do their sex ed stuff, which encourages more promiscuity ultimately and then leads to more babies that then get aborted, which leads to more money. And if this was not about money, if this was all altruistic and she was making $50,000 a year, volunteering with a supplement, or if she was, making $100,000 a year and that was the max salary in the whole organization and they weren't bringing in money hand over fist, better believe the perspective would be different. Hey, thank you for weighing in and sharing that, Christian. Much appreciated. All right, so back to this horrific situation with Christians fleeing from ISIS, making their way over to America, Iraqi Christians. So why haven't they been welcomed as political refugees? This is the question. Now look, some years ago we had a staff member who was from Norway. He had a bachelor's in business in Norway. He and his wife, very sharp, well-educated. In fact, when they both went to our ministry school, they were 1 and 2 in the class in terms of academic prowess when they graduated. And he subsequently got a master's degree from a seminary. He was the administrator at our school. And we worked for several years to try to get him status, and he could not get approved. We hired an immigration lawyer. And I joked with him at one point. I said, you know, because your name is not Muhammad something, you can't stay here. Now, I was being sarcastic because we knew that there were people in the country that shouldn't have been, Muslim immigrants that shouldn't have been here. Now, there are plenty that have a right to be here under our laws and are contributing citizens to our country. But it was striking that he could not get status. Well-educated, great business history in Norway, and further education here, seminary educated, working in a Bible school, he couldn't get status. And we ultimately said, let the will of God be done, and he had to go back to Norway. And I'm sure he's thriving there. But you have a situation now where people are fleeing from ISIS. They're being persecuted because of their Christian faith. All right? Why were they detained here in America? Why have they now been sent back? Some of them sent back to Iraq to persecution and probably death. Can you imagine the terror? Can you imagine the shock? This is America. America. What's written on the Statue of Liberty? What's the, you know, call? Bring me these. They're hurting and the deprived. And well, according to the official definition, if it is not government-sponsored persecution, then you are not a political refugee. And since ISIS is not the government, if they are fleeing from ISIS, they are not political refugees. Now, if that's the letter of the law, then they need to change that, or people need to look at the spirit of things. There are Christians who are working hard, even with the federal government, to make a way for Christian refugees to come to America. But I spoke with a pastor about this over the weekend. He met with refugees that were in Jordan. And I asked him, do they feel that America has abandoned them and the church has abandoned them? He said, absolutely. That's their feeling. You say, but we're praying. I understand. I'm not blaming believers here. Many are doing everything they know how to do. I'm simply saying we really need to pray harder and we need to ask God for mercy. And as soon as there is a path with the government to get these refugees in, we need to act on it. All right? Pray for the persecuted as if you yourself were persecuted, as if it was your own family. All right, friends, tomorrow is Thursday, which means Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So I look forward to your Jewish-related questions, and we'll be keeping you up to date with what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening with Israel, what's happening on the Jewish calendar as well. So make sure you join us. Then Friday, you've got questions, we've got answers. As always, I'll be speaking at the Safe Exit Summit in D.C. this weekend. This will be Friday and Saturday. To find out more about that, if you're in the D.C. area, go to safeexitsummit.org to read my open letter to Justin Bieber about living like Jesus, because in a recent interview, he said he wants to live like Jesus. Read that by going to AskDrBrown.org. When you're on the website, be sure to check out our special resource offer, 5 volumes on answering Jewish objections to Jesus at the lowest price ever. My bottom line today, the evil of Planned Parenthood is being exposed. May God work decisively to turn the tide.